Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Ryan Tannehill, quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, and I represent the Fence-Sider with the PH.
What's going on, everybody? This is Fence-Sider Radio. It's Thursday night. It's Wednesday night. My name is Keith. I'll be your host for, we're going to do about 75 minutes tonight, I think, depending on how much we can get through, just because it's been such a, it's been a ridiculous week following the Thanksgiving holiday and the fact that we had an early show last week. So definitely a lot we're going to get through. As always, I'm flanked by my good friend and co-host, Duke.
Going on, man?
Not much. One thing I do want to get into before we talk about what went down earlier this week with the change at offensive coordinator and just the embarrassment that was Sunday in New Jersey is the fact that whenever we do a show, I always enjoy watching looking at the sort of post-show comments that people put up on Twitter. I get a lot of questions. I get a lot of feedback from people. And, I mean, sometimes it's just, like, standard fare type stuff. But I got a couple this week that I found kind of amusing. I almost felt like Kevin put some people up to sending me these comments. Number one, I got probably about 90 minutes after we did our show, and that was we did ours last Monday because of Thanksgiving. Somebody said that I'm not gangsta enough to host the show. I have no idea what the hell that means. But so what we're going to work toward through December and January is I'm going to try to be gangsta for these people. Again, I don't know what that means. He also said that Kevin was a much more gangsta host than I was. Clearly, he hasn't met me or Kevin, because I don't think neither of us fit that mold. And then someone else sent me a message a couple of days later asking me, and I think this is a legitimate question, asking me if I'm drunk when I do this show. Of course I'm drunk. So, I mean, that I don't understand even the need for that question. I thought I fired back right at him, and I was like, that's a stupid question. You know the answer to that. We both know the answer to that. The other person we usually bring on this show is Lewis. Lewis, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Now, judging by your Twitter, your tweets that you put out the last week, you've pretty much given up on the Dolphins and life. Is that fair to say?
Not life. I have a lot more living in life, and as for the Dolphins, yeah, this season's pretty much over. Although I am interested in seeing what some of the younger players can do, and I'm glad that reports are coming out that Bobby McCain's going to get his shot at starting.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't he at this point? I mean, what is the pretense here in
because
keeping around?
And that's what they do.
That is what they do. But, I mean, hopefully you'll see less of that as they start to weed out these these coaches coming from the Philbin regime or whatever. the only disappointment I really had in the laser firing, and we'll get more into this, a little bit more in-depth coming up here. But the disappointment I had when that news came out is I made the joke last January when the Broncos' entire coaching staff was fired. I commented that John Elway just took all of Denver's coaching staff out behind one of his many dealerships in that area and just pretty much had them all shot, just completely greased all of them. So obviously we weren't going to get that with Philbin because he's already gone, but I was kind of looking forward to the mass firing. So we're not going to get that at all. So, I mean, whatever. So, I mean, the news comes out that Prize lasers out. He hasn't been in who knows how long. He's been terrible. I've never seen an offensive coordinator give up on the run as quickly as that guy. So, I mean, that was inevitable, and it happened. It was incredibly unsurprising news. the problem right now that I have, and we've touched upon this a little bit on the show, is we can sit here and beat up on these former coaches we've had, and rightfully so. But at the same time, I mean, who is going to be the guy they bring in that's going to, you know, for lack of a better term, really stop the bleeding with this team? Because it's not, there's no magic bullet right now. I mean, I keep telling myself I'd like to get back to a defensive-minded head coach, and I'm still of that mind, even though it looks like a lot of the candidates available this offseason are going to be offensive-minded guys. There's a lot of that. And that's fine if it's a guy like Hugh Jackson. As long as I can get over my tendency to call him Hugh Jackman, if I can get past that, it'll be fine. I don't really care what side of the ball the coach comes from. But what I do know is now we've got Tannenbaum running the show. So that's going to be a completely different dynamic, because we've seen him in terms of player acquisition, his tendencies, but we haven't seen the goods in terms of hiring a coach in Miami. You know, he hasn't had his finger on the button before. And frankly, I'll take anyone's finger on the button as long as it's not Stephen Ross at this point. And I don't mean to be condescending when I say that or belittle the owner, but, you know, great businessman, but stay the hell away from the football personnel decisions, because it's just not working. Doesn't know when to pull the plug too late, hires the wrong people. I stand by the fact that this team should have hired Mike McCoy nearly 4 years ago. I would tell the story about how James and I were texting back and forth that day. It was like a Friday afternoon when they announced the Philbin hiring. And we had heard the night prior that it was going to be Mike McCoy. Like, Mike McCoy had already pulled the Raiders to go to hell because he thought he was going to get the Dolphins job. And then, of course, the team does the opposite, and they go with Philbin. And I remember James was at some restaurant or something, and he said he just wanted to throw, like, a bottle of mustard across the room. He just wanted to trash the place. So I thought that was a little over the top at the time, but, I mean, in hindsight, right on. Just not a good hiring. It's not a case of just bringing in guys who are first-time head coaches as opposed to retreads, because I remember before they hired Philbin, all you heard about was, we don't want a retread. We don't want this guy. We don't want Jeff Fisher because he's a retread. But I get that. That's fine. But there are downsides to both. You're either get a guy who's perhaps impressionable, because, I mean, it's his first time, you know, manning the helm, calling the shots, whatever cliche you want to use for it. Or you have a retread, or a guy who's incredibly stubborn. He's going to come in, he's going to do things his way right off the bat, whether you like it or not. That could include looking for a different quarterback than Ryan Tannehill. Although I imagine that the fact that this team has a quarterback in place is going to be somewhat of a selling point for them this offseason, especially when you have Ndamukong Suh on the defensive side of the ball too, and we'll get to him too in a little bit. But looking at this team and looking at the available candidates and just trying to speculate or try to figure out where this thing is going to go, because in a similar manner to how Dolphins fans are always looking for that next Dan Marino, even though he's not coming down the pipe, I feel like they do the same thing with Don Shula. You know, where's our next Don Shula? Where is he? Well, Don Shula was one in a million. You know, only so many people on the planet have that guy's level of, you know, ability to coach up, multitask. You always hear about the multitasking stories, the legendary stories about how that guy could monitor the offense and the defense while they're practicing on opposite sides of the field. So if you're thinking that this team's going to get the next Don Shula, then, I mean, let it go. It's not going to happen. I mean, if you're in, I keep seeing these people like, we don't want retread. Well, Hugh Jackson's a retread. All right, he's already had a coaching gig. And granted, I mean, if you look at what he's done since his gig in Oakland, I think that makes him an ideal candidate for overseeing, coaching Ryan Tannehill. I think that, and I don't want to base the hire solely on that, because I feel like the Philbin hire was because this team expected him to be a quarterback developer because he was mowing Aaron Rodgers' lawn. And I guess that put him in a position to say, like, hey, I had something to do with this guy's success, even though he sat on the bench, you know, the first four seasons of his career. So, or three seasons, excuse me. So, one way or another, all we can really say for certain at this point is some people are going to just hate the hire. If it's Eric Mangini, they're going to hate it, especially because we witnessed firsthand how crummy some of those Jets teams were when he was coaching them. Now, that wasn't necessarily his fault. I mean, those were some really crappy teams back then. So, I don't know. Another person I do want to bring in, he was actually the first person to call in, and I threw him in the queue for about 12 minutes, however long I've been sitting here talking. But Dolphins fan for life. I prefer to call him Chris just because too many syllables. Otherwise, what's going on?
Nothing much.
Let's turn this more into a panel thing now that I'm done listening to myself talk. Your thoughts on, and we'll just keep it brief because, I mean, I don't know how much we can talk about this without really just continuing to beat a dead horse. But your thoughts about the laser firing Duke. I mean, it comes through, obviously expected. The one thing is now you got Zach Taylor stepping up. I mean, is this pretty much just doing a little bit of maintenance work early, getting Laser out of there, giving Lamar Miller a little bit more of a chance to shine, maybe giving Zach Taylor an opportunity to, I don't want to say fix, but at least attempt to right what's broken with this offense. What did you think of the firing? What did you think of the promotion?
Wait, what? Who are you?
I said Duke.
Who are you asking?
I'm guessing that Chris actually stepped away, unless he chimes
no,
in.
No, I'm here. I'm here. I thought that you said Duke, so I was waiting for Duke to speak. And
that's cool. You can go ahead and take your turn and go for it.
I thought he was actually asking you, so I thought that question was directed to you. My fault.
All good.
Well, I'm okay with the firing, not okay with the promotion. Everybody's going to be mad by the end of the season because if they wanted to get the ball ran more, they should have promoted the running backs coach. Zach Taylor's job was to make Ryan Tannehill look good. Zach Taylor's job is going to be to continue to make Ryan Tannehill look good. Zach Taylor couldn't even do that, pretty much. I mean, yeah, you can say that Ryan Tannehill is an okay QB, but many people will sit there and say that he's not. I think he's done a far better job than a lot of people are giving him credit for, but at the same time, it's in his first mind to just get Ryan Tannehill looking good because that's going to be basically, as the former quarterback's coach, what Zach Taylor is going to earn his next job for because he won't be here next season.
Well, one question I have, I don't mean to cut you off, but and I thought about this the other day, that Ryan Tannehill has played for two lame duck offensive coordinators, a coaching staff that was, you know, for lack of a better term, just completely without ball during Philbin's stay here. You know, what quarterback in his position would thrive? Is there an example out there of a quarterback who endured such a lame coaching staff and numerous changes at offensive coordinator early in his career? I can't think of one.
It's not the, just the coaching staff, it's personnel, too. I mean, he's had 14 different receivers in 3.5 years.
Yeah. You know? And don't misunderstand me. I'm already getting tweets from people saying that for lack of a better term, I love Ryan Tannehill. I like Ryan Tannehill. I think he's a lot better than people give him credit for. But I'm totally befuddled by people who think that he's just going to be really good in spite of the fact that almost the entire coaching staff, the majority of his time here with the front office, has just been bad. They haven't been good. And I think that there's so much that goes into a quarterback's development early in his career, given his surroundings with, you mentioned the personnel on the field, the coaching staff, all those guys. Look at all of the quarterbacks who have played this game and played it well. They all had, really a stable home life when it came to their team, their surroundings, their coach. Even if they didn't have that good of players, you think about Brady's receivers early on. I mean, if you're playing in New England, you're playing for Bill Belichick. At that point, his offensive coordinator was Charlie Weiss. That was a creative scheme. It was good. They got a ton of work out of Kevin Falk. So, and the offensive line was good. That was the 5 layers of decent protection or whatever the hell it was called, that nauseating campaign. But the same goes with Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning's first year. Granted, I think that team was, 3-13? Next year, 13-3. But he had great weapons on the field. They drafted well. They continued to add weapons to the team. That the best offensive lineman he had was probably Tarik Glenn when he was healthy. I know a lot of people would say, well, what about Jeff Saturday? It definitely was Tarik Glenn. So, he had good players around him. And the team made an effort to better itself on and off the football field with its coaching personnel and its player personnel. So I don't know of anyone out there who would thrive in that. So, yeah, has Ryan Tannehill been bad this year in a lot of games? Yeah, he has sucked. He just hasn't been good, especially when you consider the expectations that were held for him and this team before the season. But you look at any great quarterback in the NFL, and I've not, as far as I can tell, none of them were putting up with the kind of crap that Ryan Tannehill has endured. It's a miracle that guy is any good. This team would have destroyed a lot of people, a lot of quarterbacks in his position.
I think part of the problem is that fans' expectations are skewed by watching stuff like SportsCenter and the shows that promote quarterbacks. I guarantee you can talk to all these people on Twitter and say, you can just ask them, name 5 quarterbacks in the NFL that can consistently win without having great help around them, they can properly win. And I'm sure they'll start rattling off names, and you can start saying, all right, yeah, let's look at a guy like Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers, playing great football, very good quarterback, 3 wins. Russell Wilson, he won a Super Bowl, could have won a 2nd Super Bowl, had a top 4 defense his entire career, top 5 rushing attack his entire career. This season, they paid him a bunch of money. They asked him to throw the ball more. The offense struggles. And if you don't think they struggle with it, I mean, they've played better in a couple of recent games. But at one point, Ryan Tannehill had thrown more touchdowns than the entire Seattle offense had scored. So, he wasn't playing well. Andrew Luck, not playing well at all this year.
Look at the coaching issues they're having there. I mean, that's not a coincidence, the fact that Pagano already has 1 foot out the door. And also interesting that some of Luck's early development.
All these quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Look at these quarterbacks. I mean, you can name like maybe 3 quarterbacks in the entire league that you say, I could put them on the Dolphins right now and they would win more games than they would lose. And that's about it. All these names that people say will win, they win because they have great help around them. And, you know, I saw a comment on the site this week about how, well, is Ryan Tannehill the reason they're winning games? No, is he the reason they're losing? You know, he's replaceable. You know, fine, let's get Phillip Rivers. You think Phillip Rivers immediately turns this team into a Super Bowl contender? I'd say he's got, you know, he's got a similar team out in San Diego, and he's not doing it. I mean, just now people are questioning the Packers. They're saying, you know, Jordy Nelson went down. Suddenly, Green Bay's offense doesn't look as good. They lost four out of the last five games. I mean, it's just like people don't understand. Quarterbacks need help. I think I was listening to a podcast today. They said they charted Dolphins had like 11 or 12 drops in the Jets game. I mean, 11 or 12 drops. How do you expect a quarterback to win? Yeah, well, every team drops. Well, since PFF had this on their site, I read this week, the team that has the most drops since week four of catchable passes is the Dolphins. So the comment, and I tweeted it, the comment was, the Packers are second only to the Dolphins in terms of drops of catchable passes. And this is not, you know, a pass that was over their head or something like that. These are catchable passes. Now, maybe they mean the ball hits them in the hand or if it's in a certain zone, I'm not really sure. The point is, people have been dropping passes. How do you expect your quarterback to succeed like that? And they don't. But I hear this term, well, quarterbacks are supposed to make the people around them better. All right, fine. Somebody please scientifically explain to me how Ryan Tannehill makes Jason Fox better or Dallas Thomas better. How does he make a receiver catch the ball when it gets him in the hands and the receiver doesn't do it? What magical power does he have to possess to do that? I mean, I see these comments, I see these tweets, and it's just like, you say this stuff, but it's completely meaningless. And it's like, I don't know, I thought people don't watch football. They watch Ryan Tannehill and have these unrealistic expectations, and then when the team doesn't win, they rush for 12 yards against the Jets. 12 yards. I mean, I walked more during that game than the Dolphins rushed for. And, I mean, it's just dumb. You know, so I just don't know what people expect. What do people want Ryan Tannehill exactly to do?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
The guy threw for 300 yards and three touchdowns, and I was going to bring up that whole 10 rushing attempt, 12 yards statistic, but I figured no, because you just did. But, you know, I mean, it's basically just media-driven drivel. It's basically why people keep on bringing up the quarterback and the quarterback, because everybody in the media is spouting off about how it's a quarterback-driven league. And, yeah, it is, because teams are passing more. But at the same time, it's basically this. Look at the last few teams that won the Super Bowl. They had a great balance of run and pass. They had the ability to run the ball. I mean, without their running back, Seattle doesn't win a Super Bowl, as you can see. You know, without a running back game, Andrew Luck never makes it past a certain point in the playoffs. And Sanchez was exposed as soon as his running game went away. And those that want to talk about how Pennington did such a good job, Ronnie Brown spent more time at quarterback than Chad Pennington that year, because most of our offense was ran out of the wildcat. It was a direct snap to Ronnie Brown, and Chad Pennington lined up at wide receiver. You know, but Chad Pennington's going to get the credit, even though Ronnie Brown spent most of the time running that offense. You know,
I think a lot of fans watch highlight shows. To go along with what you're saying, is people forget about the running game. The only time they think about it is when there's a highlight. Nobody, because a four-yard run up the middle isn't something sexy. It's not a something to get you all excited about. And so the media projects all this stuff, and this goes back to the deep ball. I would guarantee if fans would turn on the Red Zone channel or watch another game besides the Dolphins and watch other quarterbacks throw the ball, yeah, you're going to have some that throw the deep ball very well. But you see a comment, well, that deep pass, was the receiver had to slow down for it, so it wasn't in stride, so it wasn't a great pass. Or this, I'm like, go watch Drew Brees throw a deep ball. Go watch Tom Brady throw a deep ball. Tell me what you see. You see a perfectly thrown ball in stride every time? No, it's not. look at, there was one this week. Kirk Cousins threw a pass to DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson had 5 yards of separation. The ball was slightly underthrown. He had to slow up to catch the ball. Now, he had enough separation and enough breakaway speed that didn't matter. But because it was completed, because it was a highlight reel, people were like, oh, see, look at that great deep pass. I guarantee if that had been Tannehill, there would have been complaints about it. So I just think people don't understand. And it's not like I'm saying quarterbacks are even across the board, because, yeah, there's stuff that other quarterbacks are much better at than Ryan Tannehill. But it's like they watch these plays on SportsCenter, and they think that's how every quarterback plays every time. Like, oh, well, you know, Joe Flacco has this one great pass. That's how he plays all the time. And you watch him play, and you're like, what am I watching? And they don't. It's just, you know, it just feeds into this narrative. And then you've got everything else going on. The Dolphins did well to stop the run. I think they said at one point during the game that Chris Ivory had his first carry was for 16 yards, then he had 10 carries for a total of 17 yards after that. That's pretty good. But the secondary was getting lit up by Ryan Fitzpatrick. So, just the Dolphins aren't a good team right now, and it's across the board. But, you know, the quarterback always is going to take the blame for it. But it just seems like to me that there's just – it's like Ryan Tannehill takes more than other quarterbacks. you know, when Matt Ryan was playing the ball for the past couple of years and won fewer games than Ryan Tannehill, why weren't teams, you know, talking about how bad he was? Why weren't people talking about how bad Russell Wilson was at the beginning of this season, or even Andrew Luck? It's like every other team has an excuse. But then when someone defends Ryan Tannehill, well, then I'm the one making the excuse. And it's just because he's a bad quarterback and he's not doing all these magical things that people think about. I don't know.
Yeah, just from my experience, I haven't seen anybody making excuses for Matt Ryan recently. They've been pretty much saying that Matt Ryan is an awful quarterback. But I understand the sentiment that you're making. It does seem like that Ryan Tannehill, he draws more criticism than other quarterbacks in this league, and it seems like he's the only one who cannot be made excuses for. And quarterbacks and people, I was in a discussion with somebody just a few days ago, and they told me, and I basically told them how Cam Newton has this great core of players around him. And they laughed at me, and they called me an idiot. I'm like, are you kidding? Look at the receivers that Cam Newton has to work with. Ted Ginn Jr. and his family is his number one receiver. And I had already said to him what made the core. It had nothing to do with his receivers. I have always been a proponent of your running game, your offensive line, your defense. All of those things are way more important than the weapons that you have surrounding you. Look at the team that the Seahawks took to the Super Bowl against the Patriots. Who was Russell Wilson's weapons beyond Marshawn Lynch as the running back? There was no impressive weapons there, but they got there with their defense, their running game, and a balance of offense. So Cam Newton is doing the same now. He has a top 10 defense, maybe even a top 5 defense. He has a running back who's ran the ball more than anybody else in the league. He himself, Cam Newton, has pretty much become his own running game. Hint to Ryan Tannehill, you need to start doing it again. So for me, for people to tell me that Cam Newton is running the team by himself, I just have to laugh, because they're ignoring a really big part of exactly why the Carolina Panthers are doing so well. They have a top 5 defense or a top 10 defense. I don't know which. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now. And they have a running back who's run the ball more than anybody else, and a quarterback who I believe at this point has run for more yards than some running backs in this league. So for them to say that it's just Cam Newton being an awesome quarterback, yes, he's a good quarterback. He might even be a great quarterback. But he has a lot of help around him, even if it doesn't look like he, even if he doesn't have the prototypical weapons surrounding him.
I mean, I think it's highlighted by, if you look at the Texans game, I've seen comments on the site, seen people talk about that it can, you need an accurate quarterback, even on short passes, so guys can get yak. And, I mean, it blows my mind. You watch a guy like Tom Brady, who throws a ball that travels 5 yards from the line of scrimmage to a receiver who's open, who then takes it upfield and scores a touchdown. And people are like, Tom Brady's just so awesome. And then Ryan Tannehill does the same thing to Rishard Matthews. And people are like, oh, the receivers did all the work. Ryan Tannehill didn't do anything special. At this point, when you see that kind of stuff, it just becomes, you know, all right, I'm not talking to you about this anymore because you're being irrational. I mean, if you want to say that Ryan Tannehill is not doing anything great, well, then go watch some of these other quarterbacks who do the exact same things. Go watch Tom Brady. Yeah, he's a great quarterback. He is very good. I'm not trying to compare the two. But when you say, well, you know, look how great Brady is when he does things, same things Ryan Tannehill does, and you criticize Tannehill or you try to take that away from him, you know, it's just – and I think it goes back to what Keith said earlier. It's like everyone's looking for the next Dan Marino. And I honestly think, I don't know that Dan Marino in his prime would make this team a Super Bowl contender. I think he would. Would they have a better record than 4-7? Sure. But I don't think they would be I don't think they're a Super Bowl team as they are currently constructed. So how much criticism would he get? I mean, it's like what Miami fans want, and I thought about this before. It's a syndrome of the grass is always greener on the other side. Yes, every team has better everything than Miami, and we want what they get. We were a slow team in 2012. Will we get Mike Wallace? Well, he's not good enough. We need something else. There's always something more. And honestly, the only cure for it is winning. But there's more to winning than just the quarterback. But nobody sees it that way.
What did you guys think of that that game in Denver last Sunday? I mean, let's all admit it. We were happy to see the Patriots lose, get their first loss of the season, especially because New York should have beaten them two weeks prior. Did you have a problem with the officiating in that game? Did you think it was as bad as New England put out to be? And I also want to point out the fact that the irony of the Patriots calling out officiating when their entire dynasty is built on that Tuck rule call against the Raiders, I find that a little bit sickening. Every time a Patriots fan complains about the officiating, I'm like, what are you upset about? Or I think about that AFC Championship game, the first one against Indy, when Ty Law was pretty much like had his hands glued to Colts wide receivers the entire game up in Foxborough. I've never seen a defensive back manhandle a receiver core like that before and get away with it. So all of this crying and all of this, it was the refs against us. This is the revenge for the whole Deflategate thing. Whatever. But you have gotten the benefit of the call so many times that honestly, if you're on the other side of the coin, I don't feel bad for you. So that was my takeaway, but I wanted to see, like, am I too brutal in that assessment? Because I understand some of them were ticky-tack. The one on Demaryius Thomas in the that sustained that one drive, I thought could have gone either way, but if you have your hands up on a receiver's shoulders like that and they turn, they're going to get that call every time in today's NFL. It's not just the Patriots.
I really wasn't bothered by the
penalty. Unless you're the Dolphins. I saw a couple of times that play should have been called during the Jets game. I mean,
But it's not easy. It's not like it's just the Dolphins, okay? So it's not just these. It's going to sound, I don't know how to word it. I guess I don't blame the Patriots for being upset. Because at this point, it's gotten to where every team is upset I mean, let's face it, guys. The officiating is really at an all-time low. There are calls being made all over the place that have no business being called. Like, even if you breathe the wrong way, not just in Miami. Again, we see them only for Miami because we mostly only watch Dolphins games. But if we watched Colts games, Patriots games, Broncos games, Titans games, whatever game you want to play, whatever game you want to watch, there's going to be, like, at least five calls that you're going to think, look at it and think, what are you talking about? There was nothing there, or rather, you should have called something there and you didn't. So if the Patriots want to complain, I mean, fine, whatever. To blame it on the whole Deflategate and revenge, that's where they screwed up. But if they wanted to complain about officiating, I really don't mind because, I mean, who isn't complaining about officiating at this point?
But at the same time, you're like, you know, yeah, maybe you got hosed by a bad call, but you've been the benefit of plenty of bad calls. And because you've won a lot and because of those bad calls, you need to sit this one out. You know, just button it up and let some other teams complain. You know, somebody like Stephen Ross walking into a McDonald's and complaining about the price of a Big Mac. I mean, just like, you know, leave it alone, pal. You know, just deal with it.
You know where you are. No, this is my issue with Tom Brady, though. That, and I understand he's not the only quarterback that does this, Aaron Rodgers, but it's like every time that guy drops back to pass and he throws the ball and it's incomplete or they fail to convert on third down or something doesn't go their way, he is in the ref's face just letting them know and just sitting there and complaining. All that guy does, like, it's amazing how much energy he would save if he wasn't complaining all the time. And he should think about conserving his energy. He's in his late 30s. But constantly, he just sits there, and all he does is bitch and moan and whine on the field. And people wonder, I mean, there's many reasons why people dislike the Patriots. For me, that's the number one reason why. That guy is always complaining. He is always trying to leverage for a call. If he doesn't convert on third down, you can bet that he's going to sit there and he's going to complain about it. And I understand that some calls in that game didn't go their way. I would be the first person to say that, even though I didn't have a problem with it, because I was very much into the idea of those guys getting knocked out in Denver. And the fact that it happened against Brock Osweiler is pretty sweet, in my opinion. And kind of works out for Denver, too. Talk about a little bit of a resuscitation into a season that was looking like it was gonna go belly up pretty quick there. So that's cool. But I don't feel bad for the Patriots. I don't feel bad for their fans. They've been recipients and beneficiaries of so many bad calls and calls that shouldn't have gone their way. So you know what? You live by the sword and you die by the sword. I don't have a problem with it. The one thing that Lewis brought up that I totally agree with is officiating this season is an absolute dumpster fire. It is terrible. And it's getting worse. And to the point where you see all these things now where they're moving these crews around, taking them off games, already making decisions that, no, you're not going to, this crew's not calling this game, so on and so forth. People made such a stink about the whole replacement ref thing a couple of years ago. In my opinion, the replacement refs did a hell of a lot better than what I've seen this year, which is saying quite a lot, because I think those replacement refs were telling players that they had them on their fantasy team and ridiculous things like that. But, I mean, it is just, it's sad right now what's going on with this officiating. And it's, like I said, it's continuing. It's not like it's hit rock bottom. Every week that I watch football, I feel like I see something ridiculous that goes through. And you're going to get to a point where, is this going to start affecting playoff games? It's sure as hell affecting or having a say in who's going to the playoffs and who's not.
I've never been a fan of PFT, really, but they wrote an interesting article this week talking about the officiating. And you know, a lot of people are, because a lot of the refs have been replaced in the last 2 years because people kept complaining about the calls and whatnot. And now people are starting to blame the young receivers. But what they pointed out was the ones making all the wrong calls have had at least 5 to 14 years experience officiating the NFL games.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's an epidemic right now. It's bad. But I was just interested to see because and the one thing that surprised me the most about that game was in overtime, because it was third and short for Denver. And I feel like I looked at their formation and how they set up. You knew the pitch was coming when they pitched it weak side. I feel like I would be, I don't know, if anyone didn't, it's not like I'm some incredible savant when it comes to looking at football alignments and everything. But I just looked at that play and I was like, well, of course you'd pitch it here. I mean, why wouldn't you? In the snow. I mean, that just seems like an easy sell. And then New England just dies on the field. It almost looked like they weren't trying. And it's weird to see a Belichick team get caught off guard like that, because I feel like everyone knew that play was coming. So that was interesting.
That's something interesting, because they said after the Monday night game, I think NFL matchup or whatever it was called, and I said this on Lewis's show last night, and Merrill Hodge got on there and said, you know what the best part about this play was? And, of course, he's talking about the Denver game. He said, was the fact that Brock Osweiler audibled into it. And, of course, my ears perked up when I heard that. And then they I'm sorry?
I said, of course, anytime you hear the word audible, you're like, hey, what's that?
Yeah, we just have these calls and checks that we go into when we see the front. I'm like, this guy is starting his second game or whatever. He's playing the Patriots, and this guy can audible? And you mean to tell me that Ryan Tannehill cannot audible? I was like, just get out of here with that mess. I mean, I don't know, but that might have been the straw. Like, somewhere down the line, Dan Campbell heard that. He's like, wait, Brock Osweiler audibled? Yeah, Laser, you're out of here. I mean, seriously, just how bad is that? I turned the TV off at that point. I was like, I don't want to hear this anymore. It's just, in that situation, you won't let a guy like Tannehill, who's, I would think right now, is a better quarterback than Osweiler, and you won't let him audible? Just get out of here with that.
Well, I feel like that when we talk about Tannehill getting set up to fail, that's a shining example right there. That is sterling when you think about it. He can't audible. He's an intelligent guy on the field. He knows what he's looking for. You know, he keeps saying it, too. What's that?
Like, they keep saying that. The coaches are not denying that Tannehill is smart, that Tannehill could pull it off. But they never say, well, because that's what really ticks me off, is that they know he can, but they won't. Now, supposedly, the reports are coming out that Tannehill's going to get to have some input into the offense and he'll be able to audible now. And even then, I'm still not buying it at this point, because I need to see it to believe it. But it drives me nuts to hear, like, Campbell says it and Laser supposedly says it and all these guys keep saying it. He's smart, he can handle it, but we don't want to make him lose his rhythm. And I've said this over and over again. If the play you're about to call is specifically built to be stopped by whatever look the defense is showing, it doesn't matter how much rhythm you have, it does not matter what kind of execution you have, that play is countered by exactly by not even the execution, the scheme of the defense, the look they're giving you is specifically built to stop the play you're about to run. And that no amount of rhythm is going to help you there. Tannehill, if you keep saying that he's smart enough to handle it, that he has the cerebral ability to change the play at the line of scrimmage and put it into a better succeeding play, then it's not even good strategy. It's common sense to let this man do what he is paid to do. You didn't pay him $96 million to be a robot. People keep a big reason everybody's so mad is because we paid him all this money. Well, then let him play like a quarterback who's earned all that money. That's the biggest thing.
That is the best thing you could have ever said. I could not agree with you more. They're paying him all that money, yet they have him leashed to the car like he's some low-grade commodity. And it's not a big deal because they have absolutely no faith in what he's doing. You didn't pay him all that money so you could sit there and marginalize and minimalize his effectiveness on the football field. But that's what this coaching staff has done routinely since he's gotten, since he entered the league. You know, and he was a, you know, you heard that. I've never seen the word raw attached to a player's name as much as it was with Ryan Tannehill's when he came out of Texas A&M. I get it. He's raw. You know, he was playing wide receiver for a time there because he couldn't get on the field as a quarterback. So, he, I mean, he did that so he could go ahead and get on the field. But, I mean, the thing is, everything from I've seen from him suggests that he's got it going on upstairs. He's very cerebral in his approach to the game. Why wouldn't you have him call, you know, have him for allowing him to audible? I'm at a point now where I just let him call his own plays. I would just say F it. Whatever.
I'm kind of wondering if part of the reason why they failed to let him audible was because of the fact that, you know, they wanted to handcuff him to the pocket. And if he had a chance to audible, he might have gone out of the pocket more than, you know, most people. Because if no one's open, guess what? Quarterback should run.
Where's for Aaron Rodgers all the time?
Russell Wilson does that all the time. There's guys on Twitter that talk about that. They showed one today. I saw Russell Wilson had a clean pocket, had a receiver coming up and across the middle. What does he do? He's looking right at the guy, you know, to come up, and instead of anticipating a pass or putting it out there, he runs from a clean pocket. But you don't hear people, how many people complain that, oh, he shouldn't run too much? I mean, it's a no-win situation. Either Ryan Tannehill runs too much, he needs to stay in the pocket more. He stays in the pocket, it collapses, no one's open, he gets hit, he gets tackled, he needs to run more.
If you're going to get hit running forward.
Yeah. Several times you've mentioned this on the show, and it shows up perfectly in this discussion, is these coaches that we had all wanted to be the smartest guy in the room. And no one exemplified that more than Bill Lazor. I mean, you've got this quarterback, you paid him a bunch of money, all signs point to him being able to. And, you know, I look at it like Dan Campbell when he came out of his initial press conference was that he pretty much all but said that Joseph Edelman was a wuss. He danced around it as best he could without actually saying, you know, this guy was a pansy. We're actually going to toughen these girls up a little bit. See, the same thing. Well, we can't run him. We don't want him to audible because he gets out of rhythm. To me, that's coach speak for. Look, I've let him audible. This idiot over here won't, and I can't change it. Well, now he's changed it. So, you know, if maybe Ryan Tannehill does well at it, maybe he won't. But it's just a case of Bill Lazor thought, no, my system's going to work. I'm the coach. You're the quarterback. I don't care how good you think you are or how everybody else thinks you are. My plan will work because I say it will. And when it's not working, he has that clueless look. Why is my plan not working? I'm smarter than everyone else. It's, you know, and we've been calling.
And you've got people who want Chip Kelly.
Who?
Like,
where?
You think that
point them out to me so I can call them out for being
goes
stupid.
Away if Chip Kelly's in the fold? Hell no. That's another offense where you're not audibling out of it.
Who's calling for Chip Kelly? Point them out to me so I can say they're stupid.
Okay, after the show, I'll send you a list of names, and I'll sick you on them, and you can sit there and
Jeez.
Personally go door-to-door and tell all of them that they're complete morons.
Like, we just nailed Bill Lazor, and you want Chip Kelly? Come on!
You haven't seen that on your feed? I get that all the time. I thought that was common.
No, I don't see Chip Kelly. I see guys like Hugh Jackson. I see Sean Payton, and I see all these other guys. I've never seen Chip Kelly. I'm like, oh, my God.
I've seen a lot.
Are you kidding?
I've seen a lot of Chip Kelly. Yeah. I too, have seen a lot of Hugh Jackman and Sean Payton, too. So, and, yeah, I'm just going to call him Hugh Jackman because I can. So
yeah, I was about to say, you're going to keep that bad habit, aren't you?
No, I'm just going to own it at this point. I don't even, whatever. I'll do what I want. So, looking at these coaches, though, yeah, I see a lot of Chip Kelly out there where people are like, well, if he's out of Philadelphia, let's get him. No, let's not. Let's not and say we did not. not interested, especially if you're interested in the growth of your quarterback going forward. So,
I'm probably the
smartest guy in the room.
I'm probably the only person that is hoping that James Betcher gets a call to interview for a Dolphins head coach job.
I don't think you are. I've seen that once or twice, but I would say that you were definitely the first person to bring that up, because I don't think that's the first time you've mentioned that.
No, I mentioned that in one of the threads, and somebody said he might get an interview, but he'll never get the head coaching job. And
right,
I mean,
because you have to be so incredibly qualified to coach this team. You don't even have to call plays if you're an offensive coordinator. So yeah, the bar has been set extremely high by these guys. Like, the Dolphins are the NFL's Harvard. So, I don't know. The whole thing is nauseating. And the worst thing about it is these guys are probably going to beat Baltimore on Sunday.
I wouldn't be so sure.
Well, Baltimore is...
If Fitzpatrick can light them up, then I don't see why Matt Schaub can't.
Well, I agree. But, I mean, Baltimore looks like a team that was just hit by a car repeatedly.
So do the Jets.
So do the
other teams.
If you've noticed, the Dolphins are incredibly incapable of winning a divisional game. And, all signs point to them getting swept by the division, which is not a great look, especially when you're expected to win that division. So, the sobering thing, and I saw this one coming, is as soon as they lost that game on Sunday, the draft talk started. What spot are we getting? Can we get the number one pick? Probably not. There are some really bad teams out there. I think, what's the worst team in the league? 2-8? Or 2-9, maybe?
It's either the Chargers or the Cowboys.
I think it's actually the Browns. Browns have
maybe
2 or 3 wins. Which, by the way, we should talk about that, too. Did you guys watch those videos of Browns fans at that game on Monday night?
I don't know what you're talking about, actually.
It was on Deadspin. Anyway, so you had all these different fan shot videos. Like, there's this one, and this is the best one. Actually, there are two that I would say were the best. One, there is this extremely large, drunken man wearing, I'm fairly certain he was wearing a Barkevious Mingo jersey, and it was, he had all these layers under it and everything. And when the Browns lost that game, this guy, someone else in the crowd is, kind of just taking note of everything that's going on. All these people are disgusted. And then it pans to this guy in the Mingo jersey. He reaches up and tears it off of his body like he's Hulk Hogan. Except I'm fairly certain there were no perforated marks in this jersey. It takes some serious strength to just sit there and just completely shred a garment like that. So, I mean, that's big boy strength right there. The other video, and this one was my favorite, this kid who had, he had upper end zone seats, so he was facing the Browns as they were kicking the field goal, the field goal attempt to win the game, and he's doing a selfie, so he's like a selfie video, and he's holding up his phone, and he's in it smiling while the play is going on behind him. And then he hears the kick is blocked, and you see him while the selfie's still going. You see him, he turns around, and you just see his expression as he watches them return it for a touchdown and lose. And then the video is still going, and he just kind of just folds his head and just walks out of the stadium. It's kind of like that part on The Simpsons where after Lisa pretty much humiliates Ralph Wiggum at the Krusty thing. And Bart's like, if you look closely, you can see the exact moment where his heart rips in two. It was pretty much that for this kid. You felt so bad for him, but you were also laughing because his reaction was hilarious. And maybe because
we relate.
What's that?
We relate.
Oh yeah, certainly. Although I can only imagine how this fan base would react to a loss like that. That's bad. That is over the top bad. But nevertheless, you've got a lot of people thinking they're going to get a top 5 pick now, and it's not out of the question because outside of the Baltimore game, I'm not sure who else they're going to beat. I mean, the Giants are incredibly inconsistent, so I don't know. Maybe the Dolphins find some sort of new life in those old school aqua uniforms they're wearing that night. But I mean, I don't see it. I mean, they've got 4 wins right now. I'd say that, you know, they finish with 5 at the most. And yeah, 5-11 this year is going to get you a decent pick. There's a lot of 4-7 teams right now. There's a couple of 2-3 win teams. I think a lot of the 4-7 teams are going to win a couple more games before it's said and done, because they play in weak divisions and they might be able to beat up on some other teams, or you'll get that sort of divisional parity that goes on every so often. Like if Carolina lost to Atlanta or something. Atlanta is absolutely terrible right now, but any time you get an NFC South divisional game, you never know what's going to happen. So, I don't know. If this team ends up, let's say they end up with a top 5 pick, and it's possible, and I mean, you got a lot coming in. You're going to have a brand new coaching staff, more likely than not. I mean, you want to talk completely revamped in terms of coaching personnel, this team will have it. If you have that top 5 pick, and we've talked about draft picks a little bit on this show, do you stick to what we said? Are you looking for, I mean, linebacker in the top 5, that's heady stuff. Usually when it's guys like that, it's dudes who can rush the passer, guys like Khalil Mack, you know. But, I mean, do you stick with that route, or are you interested in just, are you going the best player available, and at that spot, chances are you're going to get an absolute stud? Or what are you thinking if you have that top 5 pick and you're just looking to salvage with what you have in terms of a good quarterback you hope can become a very good quarterback and a defense that you'd like to build around in Ndamukong Suh?
Miles Jack, Reggie Ragland, Jalen Smith, I don't care. If we get a line, if we get a top tier, I've been saying this for weeks and weeks and weeks now. If we get a top tier middle linebacker, it helps a lot of positions all over the field. And not only that, this is another point I decided I wanted to bring up because I actually just realized this. If we get a top tier middle linebacker, like somebody who can become the next big thing, whether it's Jack or Ragland or whoever, if this guy turns out to be a world beater, then that means we will have at least one star on all three parts of our defense. Rashad Jones is our secondary guy. You got 2 on the D-line, and then you got whoever the new rookie is with the linebacker core. That helps a lot.
Jalen Smith playing behind Ndamukong Suh would be pretty sick. I don't know if anyone's had a chance to watch Notre Dame. I typically avoid Notre Dame because I really don't like them. And obviously you can watch all their games because they're all on NBC. But Jalen Smith is a player where when I watch him, he wows me. He's awesome. So, I mean, I think he's a definite top 5 material. Because I think that you're going to see the typical thing I talk about, you're going to see some teams get baby crazy for quarterbacks early on. Cleveland is such a mess right now, so you'll see that with them. I wouldn't rule any of that out. The only problem is that everyone thought this was going to be such an awesome quarterback class, and it's really not going to be. Kind of a testament to the fact that no one even knew who Paxton Lynch was before this season. Now I'm seeing some expectations that he'll go number 1 overall. That kind of reminds me of 2013 when Eric Fisher was the number 1 pick, and most people were like, who? So,
The 2013 draft class is a mess.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been had I been picking.
Yeah. Well, Duke and I had a lot of good plans for that draft. We were all into guys like Desmond Trufant, which you kind of feel bad for that guy. He and Alford in Atlanta, I like that tandem. I think they're good. And the funny thing is, Duke and I had talked about getting Trufant and Alford that year. Just like in 2012, when people wanted Peyton Manning to come to Miami, I was like, the cool thing would be if they drafted Brock Osweiler and put him behind Peyton Manning. I swear I did that. You can find my article still up out there if you want to read it. And I thought it was funny when Denver did that. And I was like, wow, you know, John Elway totally ripped me off. Obviously, you didn't. I'm kidding. But
We had Desmond Trufant, that was a pick that we had kind of talked about. We figured the Dolphins were going to, if they stayed at 12, were going to take Tyler Eifert, and that turned out to be a great pick. So
yeah, he was my guy.
It took a while for Eifert to pan out, though. I don't think Dolphins fans
would
have
an answer for him. Well, because he had the injury, and then you could also make the case that Andy Dalton really got his game together. Notice that once Dalton, and I mean, which is why I think a lot of people are into that coaching staff right now, because I mean they're getting a lot of out of Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton does not have a very strong arm. Yet, I mean, he throws the ball downfield. He's confident in the way he attacks the entire field right now. So I don't know, but yeah, Eifert was definitely my guy. When we started talking about Trufant, we thought he was going to be a second round pick, because he was at that point, like that January. Before the combine, I think he ran something like a 4.37 or 4.38 at the combine. So, like, ugly fast time. And then he started to get a lot more attention. So, I mean, I've had a lot of misses, too. You know, there's guys I thought were going to be good. And, I mean, they turned out to just be not good, just flat garbage. But, I mean, realize that right now, Andrew Luck isn't looking so good. And he was supposed to be the golden boy. You know, I understand he's got injuries working against him right now, unstable coaching staff, which, you know, hey, that sounds familiar. But, I mean, there's no sure thing in this league. And there are times where guys are going to struggle, especially when their surroundings are inadequate. And, yeah, this team got Ryan Tannehill a lot of weapons. I think Devontae Parker is going to be awesome. But all of those weapons don't make as much sense when the team itself is in absolute shambles and refuses to run the football, which just absolutely just handcuffs the passing game in terms of its ability to stretch the field and really get somewhat of that cushion that you see, or that sort of wide berth you see a defense give an offense when they're running the ball well. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not making excuses for anyone. Ryan Tannehill needs to be better. But Ryan Tannehill's coaches need to be better, too. And it's paramount for this team to make sure that the latter happens this offseason. No more duds, no more half measures, no more of this crap that these guys have put in front of this team. You managed to marginalize Ndamukong Suh's ability on the football field in some of these games. And that's when you know you're shooting yourself in the foot and you're getting in your own way. And that's the smartest guy in the room mentality. Kevin Coyle had it too. And, you know, this team, in my opinion, hasn't recovered from that. Yeah, they beat down Tennessee and Houston, and I realize that Houston's in a position to make the playoffs now. But they play in the AFC South. Who cares? That division sucks. I mean, it's almost like it's the battle of attrition in a lot of ways. So, I hate to say it, but, I mean, that's the case. Sorry. So, you bring in these players. You got Sue in there. You got some really good players on offense. And you just make them look average. So, I mean, they got to find a way around this. You got to make the right hire. This will be the most important coaching hire the Dolphins have made since Don Shula. I don't think I'm even putting myself out there by saying that. You have a lot of talent on this team. If you get this right, this team is going to be good for the next decade. The talent is there. And more is on the way, especially if they continue to stink it up and they get a high draft pick. Got to get it right. No more of these half measures. No more of these yes men. I don't want Jim Tom Sula Jr. coaching this team. I want guys who know how to win and know how to get the most out of their quarterback. And
do you know why
audible once in a while?
Do you know why I pushed James Betcher for the head coaching job? It's because the very first coaching hire I see him making is hiring Bob Sanders to be his defensive coordinator.
Will Bob Sanders get hurt while he's coaching the defense?
He does a heck of a job with their linebackers.
I'm only making a joke just because Bob Sanders was an awesome player who could never stay healthy. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a different Bob Sanders, but
that's why I made the joke.
Sorry, I'm
seriously having to mute all of you
out of it. But I've been pushing Jalen Smith for a long time too, so I'm with you on Jalen Smith. Even if we're top five, I mean,
oh yeah,
you get a linebacker.
Top five, I think, because that's why we haven't talked about him as much. Because I think we've already kind of come to a consensus that unless something weird happens, he's going to be the first linebacker taken. He's awesome, and I mean that's a pretty incredible thing to say considering the amount of talent that's coming out at the linebacker position in this draft. Tentatively, of course. So,
I mean, honestly, yeah. I am just scared of drafting anybody from Alabama. So, Raglan, no. But Jalen Smith, I literally watched this guy, and I think one of the biggest problems why we were so able to sit there and marginalize the talent of Sue is because Sue can't cover tight ends, and apparently nobody else on the Dolphins can either. So, I mean, we fixed that. We fixed their interior, you know, we fixed their interior ability to just their middle passing game. You just fix so much with a linebacker, and you hear corners. I don't really like any of the corners in this draft. Until, like, in the first round, I mean. Because, I mean, it's kind of like the year they only selected two quarterbacks in the first round, or one, I think, one or two, the year
2010?
No, it was more recently. I think in 2013, Buffalo.
Oh, EJ,
yeah, but
well,
there
didn't
really
want
wasn't
in the first round. I have a question, actually, and we can be serious about this now. So, if you brought Bob Sanders over, because I, off the top of my head, I think he's only been in Arizona a year, and I'm all for poaching any coach that comes from Arizona because I think that team does it right now. Mm-hmm. But if you brought him over, is he the defensive coordinator? I didn't hear you say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's the defensive coordinator because basically the job he's done with the linebackers, he you know, the next step up is to put him at defensive coordinator because you can't really just say, hey, I want you to be our linebackers coach or, hey, I want you to be this guy. I mean, their linebackers do a heck of a job. I mean, that's the unit that, and how many of their unit deserve to go to the Pro Bowl this year? You know,
right.
It's just, you know, that's his first coaching hire I see. You know, that's the reason why I push Betcher. You know, but. Yeah.
I like it. I mean, I'm all for options right now. I've been feeling a little under the weather tonight, so I'm gonna just put the warning out now that we've got about, let's say, like a maximum of 5 minutes. So, is there anything else that you guys want to get out there? I thought, Chris, that there was something you wanted to talk about with Stephen Bailey.
Yeah, I wanted to get everybody's opinion on that because you know it happened in Miami. First off, it seems like anything shooting-related or murder-related seems to happen in Miami. But, you know, I mean, it seems like players come here to get into trouble. They had the drunk driving manslaughter a while back, and now, you know, he gets shot. You said so yourself. You had high hopes that we would draft him. What does everybody think about that? You know, what happened?
I'll jump in. Just because, why not?
Yeah. Like, somebody ought to go first?
Yeah, or I'll do it. The first thing was when I saw that he's been shot in the head twice, I understand that they constitute the head as anywhere in the head doesn't necessarily mean it's the brain or anything, even though that's the first thing I always think about when I hear something like that. But it also reminded me of the Chris Johnson thing when he got, I think he took a bullet to the shoulder. And it was because he had been leaning over. Otherwise, it could have easily been his head. So the whole thing, like, I'm just glad he's gonna be able to pull through. And, I mean, I don't live in South Florida, so I don't know. That kind of news didn't strike me as much as it would had it, like, happened in Chicago or something. Usually I'll take more note of that if something happens, like, up here in the Midwestern region.
I don't really have a comment on it. I mean, it's awful what happened to him. This is the world that we live in. And we just gotta move on and live with it, I guess.
All right, then. Well,
what is it?
Look, excuse me. Like I said, coming down with something. So I think I'm getting progressively sicker as the show goes on. Looking at the landscape of this team, I mean, we can all agree it's not very good. And frankly, it's really hard to talk about this team. Right now, who are your guys' Super Bowl picks as we're, you know, second day of December? Who do you think is going to do it?
I'm going to stick with the Panthers.
Okay.
I don't really know.
I'm going with Arizona, even though they didn't look very good against San Francisco last week. And I understand there was a ton of officiating issues that came up in that game. I'm going to go with a wild card. I think it'll be, as long as Carson Palmer can stay healthy, I guess I got to hedge my bet that way. I think that I like what they're able to do. And I think that if they're able to play Carolina, that would be a hell of a game. So I'm not feeling confident in Green Bay right now. I think they look incredibly average. And I got to say, Brett Favre made a living, for pretty much a career, out of beating the Chicago Bears. So for Jay Cutler to go up to Lambeau and get his first win there on Brett Favre night, that's something that I don't know if Green Bay fans will ever recover from. That is brutal. You should, honestly, the day after, you should have seen it around here. I've mentioned this before on the show. There are a lot of Packers fans in this area, and they just absolutely look just bulldozed. I mean, I was amused. I don't really like Packers fans very much. I have no skin in that game, but they irritate me. They're kind of like St. Louis Cardinals fans. Yeah, we're the greatest fans in the sport. Yeah, whatever. So
I think Matt Hasselbeck finally gets his ring.
Really?
And then he retires. Yep.
Wow.
Matt Hasselbeck hasn't lost a game yet. And he's playing lights out for a 40-year-old, and he knows that window's closing. So, yeah.
You need to put some money on that. That is a bold prediction.
It's a bold prediction, but it's highly plausible. I mean, the guy is smart, and, you know, he's won a lot.
Do you think that kind of – well, I don't suppose it would taint Andrew Luck's legacy, but it's not the greatest look. I mean, granted, he's injured. But, so I mean, it's not like he's out for the season. What happens if he's ready to go going into the playoffs? But Hasselbeck's been your guy. What do you do? I mean, well, I know what you would do, granted, but given what you just said. But do you think that's something they struggle with?
I don't think so. Because
no,
as long
no,
as
not going to struggle with it.
You don't
as
think
long
so?
As Matt Hasselbeck
is
still winning
quarterback. Well,
he's your franchise quarterback, but your backup's winning. You don't bench a QB if he hasn't lost, you know?
I don't disagree. I'm just, I'm just putting the narrative out there that you will see if that happens or if it comes to that. It's the same thing in Denver right now. Because people are like, they should put Manning back in. Hell no, you should not. Brock Osweiler looked great the other night. He throws the ball downfield. That team wants to throw the ball downfield. They're built to do that. And it gives the – and you notice that C.J. Anderson all of a sudden comes to life. I understand he was a late bloomer last year too. But he gets going as soon as they start stretching the field. That's a no-brainer in my opinion. So, I mean, no offense to Peyton Manning. I mean, it's tough to see him go out that way. But, I mean, you got to – you dance with the one you brought. So, or brung you if you're into that vernacular.
The funny thing about the Andrew Luck and Matt Hasselbeck situation will be all the people, media, fans, whoever, have kind of built up their portfolio, so to speak, with all of the QB win stuff, all the stuff. Andrew Luck's the next great guy. I mean, see comments. Andrew Luck was the second best quarterback in the league after last year. So what happens if, let's say, Hasselbeck plays great the rest of the season, stays undefeated, then they come to Miami, Andrew Luck comes back in, and the Dolphins, who at this point may have 5 wins, beat them, or it's only 4 wins and beat them. Do you bench Andrew Luck after that? And that's going to be a really fun to watch some of these people kind of dance around, you know, like certain media beat writers that would, oh, Luck's the greatest thing, you know, they put down Tannehill all the time, and then they watch this guy that they say, let's watch a real quarterback play, not Tannehill. And then he comes in after a 40-year-old backup, shows him up all season, he comes in and sucks it up again. Then what happens? I mean, do you start the guy and bench him or what? I agree that you should let Hasselbeck keep playing. I would put Andrew Luck on IR. Just let him say, you know what? You know, it's about the future with that guy. We're not, you know, we're going to try to win with Hasselbeck what they're doing. But it's going to be fun to watch how these people kind of dance around that topic. Because if they don't watch out what they say, they're going to undo a lot of stuff that they've spent a lot of time building up regarding quarterbacks in general and in Miami, Tannehill specifically.
Yep.
You know, it all depends on his mind state, too. I mean, the guy, Luck's actually been hurt more than Tannehill, too. You know, I mean, I think he's had, like, 2 or 3 seasons where he's been hit with the injury bug. But, I mean, I don't think you go so far as to put him on IR. I mean, Hasselbeck is 40 years old, and you want to have that competent backup. But, I mean, keep Hasselbeck in and make Luck actually win his job back. You know, if he can, cool. But if he can't, you know, we've seen how injuries just mess with your head sometimes, and you don't think you have that same zip on your passes or whatever. You know, Culpepper wasn't the same person after he hurt his knee. Just saying.
Yeah. That was a brutal knee injury. All right, this has been good, I think. I'm not really feeling well right now, so I've had enough. So I just say thank you to all three of my contributors tonight. You guys usually join me, so this is kind of like the regular rotation at this point, which is pretty cool. We'll be back we won't be back next Wednesday. I'm going to have to do the show. Well, we'll do it tentatively Tuesday. I got to play, my band's got a show in downtown Chicago next Wednesday afternoon, so not going to be around for that, so we'll find an alternate night for that. But aside from that, enjoy the games this weekend. Try not to get too down, especially if they lose. But like I said, this team manages to find a way to beat the Ravens when they're at rock bottom. I don't know what it is with this team. So for Lewis, Duke, and Chris, thanks for joining me tonight, and we'll talk to you guys again sometime next week. Have a great night.
You too. Good night.
Good night.